So two breathtakingly creative nitzivs. So it was extremely creative, extremely novel. It was willing to take different ideas that aren't necessarily latent in the psukim or silly in the Russian and build new ideas. So one of the ideas is that when the Torah describes Yaakov being injured, so Vayar ki lo yachol lo, strange pasuk. The Malach realizes he's been beaten, he's been defeated. Vayiga bekaf yirecho, so he touches Yaakov's hip, which is strange because he's being defeated and yet he's injuring Yaakov. Vateka kaf yerech Yaakov, and Yaakov's hip becomes dislocated. Dehe av ko imo, that's a redundant phrase. Of course they're fighting. That's how he got injured, because Yaakov is battling this Malach. So why does the Torah stress behe of ko imo? Gemara and Chulin darshins from this extra phrase, but according to the Nitziv, this was round two of the fight. Vayavik Yishimo, which is a prior pasuk, that's round one, where the Malach, where the strange person, this mysterious, whoever this mysterious entity is, he attacks Yaakov. Vayavik Yishimo. But at a certain point, Yaakov defeats this attacker. The attacker cries uncle. The Malach cries uncle. Okay, you gotta have me. And he wants to end the fight. But Yaakov continues. He goes, I'm not letting you up so easily. They have Kaimo means Yaakov is fighting now. Yaakov is now the aggressor. Yaakov is now engaged in battle. The Malach was willing to walk away. Okay, we'll call it even. We'll call it fair and square. Draw. Yaakov is continuing this battle. They have Kaimo. Vayavik means this battle was launched by the Malach, wherever it was. Behav Kaimo means the Malach is willing to part from Yaakov, but Yaakov is unwilling to disengage. And because of that, Yaakov is injured. The injury is a punishment from HaKadosh Baruch Hu for refusing to let this person off the hook. Fascinating. Yaakov is not just incidentally damaged by this angel, this would-be attacker. It is an onesh from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because once this, we'll call the Malach, decided to call it quits, Yaakov should have left him off the hook. Now, it teaches us two things. In general sense, because everything here is iconic and hieroglyphic and symbolic, is that remember, a Chazal would read Vayishlach when they went to Rome. Just imagine the scene. You're on a boat, because there's no cars, obviously, or no planes. You're traveling to Rome. You've been at sea for 2-3 weeks. You're arriving in Rome. You're seasick. You've been vomiting. You're exhausted. You have no leverage because the Jews are being persecuted by the Romans. You have to plead your case to the Romans. Rabbi Akiva would be one of the emissaries that was sent to Rome. And on the way in, your last day on the boat, everyone would open Parshas Vayishlach and try to calibrate their interaction with Rome based on Yaakov's interaction with Esav. How aggressive should we be? How much can we rely on our Kaddish Baruch Hu's supernaturalism? They would literally read Vayishlach. This was the playbook for interacting with Rome. And part of this is not just in the Nitziv, but throughout the Medrashes, you can't always be aggressive for Esav. In fact, according to the Nitziv and others, Yaakov, who even gave Yaakov the right to meet Esav, he could have taken a different route. When he hears that there are 400 people looking to attack him, why don't you just go down to the mountain? So, you know, in every movie, there's always extra routes you can take to avoid the battle, just to escape. So why does Yaakov invite this confrontation? And according to some, he's punished for that, because he should have just let sleeping dogs lie. Esav has 400 men, you find some other route, you go quietly through the forest, you go quietly through the mountains, and don't try to invite confrontation. But in any event, the Nitziv is saying that Yaakov didn't just invite confrontation here, but he wasn't able to just pacify or reconcile with this Malach. And this was against Yaakov's trait. This is the second part of the Nitziv. It's not just aggression versus pacifism, but Yaakov's trait was always trying to be kind. And Yaakov's trait was always trying to pursue peace. And Nitziv has these major, major theses that span the entire Bereishis. So, for example, when Yaakov defends his record as a shepherd to Laban, so he says that I protected you and I was there all night. And Vayamri Lavateya Data, Eis Asher Vadeticha, how hard I've worked for you. In Parshas Vayetze, the Eis Asher Hayam Miknecha Iti. What does that phrase add? If I worked so hard for you, of course I watched your cattle. So the Nitziv in Parshas Vayetze says, no, Yaakov was kind to animals. Not only did he watch Laban's cattle, but he kept them eating. He kept them in his house. He kept them in his living room. Because he was a kind, compassionate soul. And he didn't want to be rude or cruel, not just to human beings. He didn't want to be cruel even to animals. He was saying, by the way, Laban, not just am I a solid and honest worker, I've kept these animals in my living room for years. Don't try to accuse me of duplicity. Or a little bit later in Parshas Vayetze, where Yaakov and Laban are building their monument of peace and their peace, what do we call it, site, or what?
Galed.
Galed, with the monument, the shrine for peace. Vayomer Yaakov le'achav lichtu avanim. He tells his brothers. Who's Yaakov's brother? His brother is Esau, before he had to murder him. Who does he ask to pick up these stones and to build the monument? So Rashi says, they're his sons. He's asking his sons. Those are the obvious people. So why is he calling them his brothers? So it says that's because he's trying to encourage them, don't pick up these stones because I'm your father and I asked you. If I'm your father, I ask you to change your tire, you change the tire. I want you to pick up the stones and build the monument because I want you to appreciate how important peace is, how important harmony is. I want you to do it on your own. Not as my children, but as adults, thinking adults, as a chav, as if you're my peers, as if you're on a par with me. I want you to build this because I want you to train yourself to be seekers of peace and lovers of peace rather than confrontationalists, rather than always looking to confront. And this is a way for him to train them, not as his children, but as thinking adults, independent adults. So Yaakov was always a pacifist. Yaakov was always searching to animals, to his enemies. And all of a sudden, this angel, well, you all know that when people attack you, when people insult you, sometimes your anger flares, sometimes it's hard for you to let go, you feel like you want to take revenge, you bear a grudge. So even Yaakov, according to the Netziv, has this one moment of weakness where, and again, this is a sworn enemy. It's not like he's beating up on one of his chas v'shalom, one of his friends, a tzaddik. This is a person who attacked him. But once the attack and once the danger has passed, he's expected, in general, and as Yaakov Avinu, to let go, to let loose. And since he doesn't, they have ko imo. Vayavik is the malach. They have ko imo, describes Yaakov, because he doesn't release. So then he's punished, and the angel is allowed to dislodges his hip or dislodges his walking area and the Gita Nasha. So that's one very interesting nitziv. Another very brief and interesting nitziv. After the entire confrontation happens, Vayaretz, Esav, they finally see one another. Vayaretz, this has been a long suspense, a lot of drama. What will happen? Where is Esav? The night before, he's got this mysterious battle. They finally see one another. Vayaretz, Esav, likrasav, vayichabkehu, he hugs him. Vayipalat, savarav, vayishakehu. So Esav is the one crying and hugging, but Vayivku, they both cry. So Esav is hugging and kissing, but they both cry. And what makes it fascinating is he reads so much of Sefer Bereishis as a gloss for Jewish history in ways that far surpass Chazal and Midrashim, because Midrashim have ways to read certain psukim. Why is it important for us to see Yaakov and Esav crying together and conciliatory? Because throughout history, Esav's descendants, Christianity, Rome, much of Western civilization influenced by Roman Christianity, they've been ruthless towards the Jews. They've lived up to Esav's greatest dreams, lived up to Esav's greatest plans. And sometimes in history, there's a switch, and it's hard for people to pull the switch. And Baruch Hashem, it appears that in our period of history, there's been a reconciliation between Judaism and Christianity, where by and large, there's still fringe elements that are harshly anti-Semitic. But by and large, the church is no longer anti-Semitic, at least in an overt way. By and large, your average Western citizen, let's not discuss Islam right now, it's a separate conversation. By and large, your average Christian, moral, God-fearing Christian is kind to Jews. Again, the state of Israel has changed the equation a little bit. It's a new form of anti-Semitism. But by and large, if you just show up in the middle of somewhere and you say you're a Jew, you'll certainly not receive the same hatred and treatment and violence that your ancestors would have if they showed up. It's hard for people to pull the switch. It's hard for people to, on the one hand, Chazal speak about halacha isa son of Yaakov, but it sounds like it's baked into history. But on the other hand, there are points of conciliation. And that's what the Torah is describing now, that there will be points when Esav and Yaakov will cry and hug one another and know that it happened before, and if it happened before, of course, it will happen again. And that's why Chazal always highlight this unique relationship between Rebbe, Yehuda Hanasi, and Antoninus, the Roman emperor. Years after Rabbi Akiva and his friends were murdered and martyred in Sarag and Malchus, two generations later, Yehuda Hanasi and the Romans had a moment of appeasement and reconciliation. And because of that air of harmony and cooperation, the Mishnah was formed. The Mishnah could never have been canonized in Rabbi Akiva's period, even if they wanted to, because they just didn't have the resources and the wherewithal and the peace of mind, because they were constantly being murdered, constantly hiding in caves, constantly on the run. Those are not conditions that allow the drafting of the Mishnah. The drafting of the Mishnah and its acceptance as an authoritative canon can only be accomplished when there was a moment of calm and tranquility So that's why Chazal and Parshas told us, mentioned Rabbi Nataninos Rashi, Shnei Goyim Bivadech, or Shnei Goyim Ayachi Paredu, Rabbi Nataninos, and that's what the Nitziv mentions in here. I'll read you the Nitziv. They both cry, Shegem Yaakov Nisara Lav L'Shazu Ava L'Yesef, because at this point, wasn't just Esef crying and feeling bad for his brother that he had chased out of Israel. It was Yaakov actually feeling deep emotion and love for his brother. V'chein L'Daros, B'Shash Shazer Esef Misarim Beruach Tahara L'Hakir Zer Yisrael. When the descendants of Esav will awaken with spiritual consciousness to love the Jewish people, Gam Anachnu Misorim L'Hakiras Esav, we will also recognize and appreciate Esav Ki Achinuhu, because we're brothers. Chumash Rebbe Hayahayav Amiti L'Antoninus, just like Rebbe Antoninus had a real relationship. So the next time that you think about, well, what does it mean to respond to the Christian world, to the Western world that seems to be kind to us? And we are meant to be kind in response, and is that just Ava? Is that just diplomatic that we should get along? Or is that real? Is that something that is baked into Jewish history? It's baked into history from this moment of interaction. It doesn't mean that there aren't B'shei U'masa Olam that will be destroyed and punished B'achmas Hayamim. But your average God-fearing descendant of Esav is recovering this moment of crying and reconciliation that already occurs in Parshas Vayishlach. So some people have a hard time. So much of Jewish history is flipping the switch, especially so hard for people after the last 1,800 years of Jewish history of anti-Semitism, of lack of statehood, of looking at the Gentiles being subhuman, which they were in many cases, and cannibalistic and violent. And all of a sudden, now we live in a world of civility, in a world of ration, in a world of mutual respect, in a world of, it's hard for people to flip the switch and see it as firm. Oh, I'm flipping the switch, I'm moderate, I'm moving away from our Masara. No, our Masara was appropriate for those 1,800 years. Now we're in a different stage. So this is the Masara of Yaakov. You can't get any more Masara than Yaakov crying on Esau's shoulder. So I said, not our Masara, open up the Nisiv and Parshas Vayishlach. Okay, have a good day, everyone.
Shir's
8, the regular 8, what is it now? 8:05. Tired, 8:15.